There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
Rise from your grave.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
What are you doing, Kissel? Are you opening up a condom right now? What are you doing? What's the crinkles?
I'm opening up a Starbucks Frappuccino, getting ready for the show, buddy.
Oh, buddy.
That is like the equivalent of drinking a quart of condensed milk.
Are we
a Cuban abuelita?
Are we starting today's episode with shaming me for drinking my Frappuccino?
You're just drinking half and half with caffeine in it.
Half and half.
Essentially, I will say, can I amend something we said last episode?
Okay. Of course.
Obviously, we really stirred the pot.
Did we?
When it came to Linkin Park. Right, we stirred the pot.
Oh, I see.
There were a lot of people, like, you know, obviously responding to people, you know, like big ups to Chester.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I hope
sure.
He's doing good wherever he is on the other side of the veil. I will say, I will vindicate him in one way. There is a band that is worse than Linkin Park.
Yeah, of course.
The band is called Crazy Town. That is the
yes.
But Crazy Town's not new metal. If we're going to stay in the new metal realm, is Stained worse than Linkin Park?
Stained is worse. I don't hate Linkin Park. Linkin Park is just fine.
It might be, but I do think that Crazy Town, I think, is technically nu metal.
Ah, come on, baby.
And there's something about what's it, the Pui Pui shells?
Yeah.
Puka shells.
Puka shells.
Yeah, those were, remember when those were in style?
Oh, my God. I can't believe anybody had sex.
All right. Well, I guess we're starting today's episode talking about 90s music. This is the last podcast on the left, everyone. I am Ben Kissel, hanging out in New York City with Marcus Parks.
Oh, it's a beautiful day.
New York City.
And of course, in Los Angeles, we have Henry Zebrowski. And I think our weather is probably not to have a weather conversation, but it's probably similar to LA today.
Mm-hmm. Mom, are you on the show?
No.
Mom, that's incredible. I can't believe that you decided to guest on the show. Are you about to tell me about all the times that you thought that you wished that I could be on Broadway, that I wished that I could be doing theater instead of performing on a podcast?
Honestly, Broadway would be really cool if you could get on Broadway. That would be nice.
It's a fucking scam, man. Broadway's a scam. I tell you what, I spend every day in Los Angeles looking for a pedophile to attack. Don't you worry about that. And I ask people dead on the street, you still got a pedophile? People leave in any kind of those, because we have like a Montessori school near where our apartment is.
Right.
And like all the kids come out and they're all so smart.
It sounds like you're just hanging out outside of a school asking if people are pedophiles, almost as if you're looking for company. What is going on with you?
Where there's smoke, there's fire.
You are losing your damn mind. All right, well, speaking of people who have lost their damn mind, we are on to part two of this fella. Again, your laugh, Henry, your impression of this man has gotten a lot of attention, and I absolutely love it. Israel Keys, part two.
I don't really get why people are making fun of my laugh, man. It's perfectly normal to laugh at your own jokes.
No, as we said in our last episode, Keys was careful up to this point to only choose victims in the lower 48. At this point in the story, he just murdered Bill and Lorraine Currier down in Vermont about 8 months before. But as his arrogance took a steady climb upward, Keys wanted to know what it was like to commit a murder in Anchorage to juice the adrenaline that much more.
I have a theory.
All right.
I have a theory about why he moved up north, why he started killing in Alaska. I think you're correct. I think he was juicing the adrenaline. But I think that there was also a part of him. It's the same reason why we added the third side stories a month. Not to always compare ourselves to serial killers, but there's a lot of legwork in creating the show. The way that they mapped out all of his various random killings, they have his flight receipts from the Anchorage airport. So they know that he went to Fort Wayne, Indiana. He was in Arizona. He was in Washington. he was traveling. And then when he would land and then drive for hundreds of miles to go drop off a kill kit and then try to like scout for a victim, and he wouldn't get one every once in a while, or he would, if you want to say he's a plus 10 serial killer victim wise, right? Which we don't know for certain, that he might have done this a lot, or he was very, very, very selective about his victim, but that took time. I think that it took too much work for him hustling back and forth. Like he got tired, essentially, and then just kept one close to home.
Yeah, he sounds like he's traveling more than the Grateful Dead. I mean, he was really working you know, he's a total piece of crap. But he was putting the legwork in, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, he sure was. And it very well could have been that, you know, he just got a little bit lazier. But either way, on February 1st, 2012, Israel Keyes went out for his next victim. Keyes chose this night in particular because he had tickets to take a cruise to Mexico out of Louisiana the very next day.
Ooh, that Louisiana cruise to Mexico. To be a fly on the wall hearing those conversations. Just all
we
the
had nothing but the spiciest tacos that you could possibly consume. Oh, come on down to the Voodoo Hamburger Bar. You know, you got to see Mama Bones, the way she puts that spice down on the hamburger. Oh my friend, my cousin.
Oh my, I would love to see a bunch of people with Cajun accents wearing sombreros just hammered off of margaritas.
Well, the thinking went that if Keyes was gone, he figured it'd make the police that much harder to track him. And in this, he was absolutely correct. Now, since this was a different sort of crime from his previous murders, Keyes scouted locations instead of people. See, for Keyes, the person wasn't as important as finding the right location, because all he cared about was killing easily and not getting caught.
So he is literally like Ray Kroc from McDonald's, where it was like, we're not in the burger business. We're in the real estate business. He was looking for locations more than he was people.
He said himself that he did take some importance on the victims because he scouted out the houses. He was kind of like BTK because he can't have anything like remotely fuck with his view of how perfect a predator he is.
I see.
Well, eventually, Keyes settled on a small coffee hut called Common Grounds Espresso, located in the middle of a parking lot at 630 East Tudor Road near the old Seward Highway in Anchorage. Now, there wasn't anything particularly special about this spot. The only thing that made it stand out was that it was open later than the other coffee stands, thereby making it the easier target. So, Keyes scouted the location for a few days and decided the amount of low traffic at the end of the night made it perfect. And in preparation, Keyes had bought himself a police scanner so he could check for police presence in his immediate vicinity.
You know, police scanners are really, really fun to have if you got your buddies around and everyone is super stoned. It's like, I mean, now I'm addicted to the Citizen app. We love the Citizen app so much. It's like police scanner 2.0. As a matter of fact, in Queens yesterday, there was a man arrested for throwing feces out of his window. And I would not have known that without my Citizen alert.
Citizen app.
Thank God, because I had to text Holden and be like, yo, bro, you live in Queens, man. Just be careful. Dookie's flying.
Dookie's flying, bro. I will say it's hard when you're like trying to relax at home.
Yes.
Because, like, you know, I'm not trying to frighten Natalie with various, this like horrible news, but definitely like sitting at home, it's like 11 o'clock at night, you know, we're watching our shutdown show, which has become Naked and Afraid.
Oh, okay.
The Citizen app will just like blink, blink. I'll see my phone go and I'll look and it's just been like, man with machete attacks person 7-Eleven. It just like shows that it's like 0.9 miles away from me. And I'm like, oh, it's covering my phone. No reason to be always plugged into the net. I'm sorry. Because Nat's like, what are you looking at? Why did you grimace?
I will say, 8 to 10 Bud Lights in, I do feel like getting involved in
of course.
Probably 50% of the alerts that I get on Citizen app.
Well, listen to the police scanner. That was a hobby of old ladies in my hometown. Just sit all night long and listen to the police scanner, waiting to hear a name that they recognize so they could wake up the next morning and start the old gossip mill about who got arrested for a DWI the night before.
Good for them.
Gotta get that hot goss, man.
Yeah, talk about doing their legwork.
Well, Keyes had also prepared a special place at home in which to commit the murder once he'd kidnapped his as-yet unchosen victim. See, Israel's house had come with a shed conveniently placed on the side of his house. So right before he left to choose a victim, Keyes set up two heaters to stave off the February Alaskan cold, then spread a 9x12 tarp on the floor to take care of any blood that might come as a result of his next murder.
Hey, baby, don't worry what I'm doing in here. I'm just kind of making, like, a super small slip and slide for myself. You know how I love throwing yard parties where it's just me? But it's in the shed.
Well, finally, he set out a couple of links of rope and screwed a few eye bolts into the wall. With everything ready, Keys left the house and pulled his 2004 Chevy Silverado into the Home Depot parking lot next to an IHOP across the street from Common Grounds. Mm.
You know that he's also the kind of guy that goes into Home Depot who has all of this shit, and they're just being like, you know, probably customary with the rope and the tarps and all the and the shovels and the eye bolts and, you know, the guys like Home Depot's like, oh, this is an unusual load that you got here, Mr. Keys. And he's like, yeah, I'm gonna use it to fucking kill somebody tonight. And they all go like, yeah. That's scary that you said that.
That is a perfect small town trifecta, though. IHOP, Home Depot, coffee shop.
Yep.
Why would we move?
Then, at about 8 p.m., when Keys heard chatter over the scanner that something big had gone down across town, which pulled the police in that direction, Keys got out of his truck and began walking towards the stand where 18-year-old Samantha Koenig was closing up. Thing was, though, Keys hadn't quite decided just what he was going to do as he was walking up to the window of the kiosk. He knew he was definitely going to rob the place, but he didn't even know how many people were working there that night.
Mm.
Unfortunately, it was only Samantha Koenig, who had only been working there a month when Israel Keys came calling. With his .22 in the pocket of his jacket, Keys walked up and ordered an Americano.
I want it extra hot, please. Because that's the only way I can drink it is if it burns my fucking throat.
People are like that, though. I don't understand super hot Americano. I don't understand it.
No clue what's going on. It's a sociopath's drink. That's why I like my Frappuccinos, as we figured out. Why would they just have this 18-year-old girl closing after 1 month, though? That's a mistake.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you ever lived in... You've lived in a college town.
Of course.
The entire town is run by 19-year-olds.
Well, that's
where
true.
Where it's like... The oldest manager is like the 23-year-old who just didn't graduate, who just ended up like staying in Tallahassee.
Yeah, why would I, man? Why would I stay in college? I get benefits here at Arby's. I get great bennies. I get like free lunches.
I got my shit all fucking worked out, dude. It's fucking, I got Trish. She's my girlfriend for fucking ever, dude.
Yeah,
I give me shit about nothing, dude. I got my Hyundai Elantra. Fucking, where do I gotta be, man? Fuck this shit.
Well, Samantha turned her back to make the order, and when she turned back around to hand the Americano to Keys, he had his gun drawn and pointed towards her. Keys then told her to turn out the lights, and after that was done, he climbed in the window. Telling her to get on her knees, Israel bent down and was binding her hands behind her back when she told him that her father was going to be there any moment to pick her up. Now, this presented a problem for Keys. In the past, Keys had always been careful to never use a car registered in his own name when committing his more heinous crimes. But since things had gone smoothly thus far, Keys risked it and pushed Samantha out the door after gagging her with a handful of napkins. Mm.
This is the forget where the monkey wrench section is.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I believe, like, if you want to believe that Israel Keys was telling the truth about claiming to have murdered at least 7 people, this is what actually makes me believe it, is that he actually has a measure of confidence going into this. And it's like he's done this shit before.
So what is this phase then? It's not berserker because he's still in control, but he's more, I guess, comfortable with killing?
Definitely comfortable with killing, and this is a phase in which he wants to juice up the adrenaline. We're going to see exactly how he's going to do that, because he wants to do something more than just murder. And he's also tired of nobody knowing who the fuck he is. He's tired of not getting any recognition.
Aww.
This is another way that he is completely in line with Dennis Rader.
Write a song like Crazy Town did. Doesn't have to be good, but you can get recognition.
You could write a whole album of songs about murdering women and get it out of your system.
Sure.
I don't think it's going to be popular.
No.
But if you just imagined it and wrote it, technically, you're just Chuck Palahniuk.
You're just an artist.
So he took her out to his Silverado, pushed her in the passenger seat, and told her that he was going to hold her for ransom. And all she had to do to survive would be to cooperate.
Oh, yeah. All that big Alaskan oil money. She was definitely an oil magnate's child. That's why she's closing a coffee shop. Where's the money?
Yeah. And there was
it was fake, Kissel. It was it was never going to happen.
Yeah. And it was the exact same thing that the couriers had said before. They're like, we don't have any money. You're not going to get any money for ransom. Why are you doing this?
Right,
and she was the same way.
But that's why you could see the escalation with the couriers, where he kind of set it up in an almost a Joe Callinger sort of way in his mind, where he set up these kind of scenarios where, because, well, when the one guy escaped and the other person was running away, this gives him the juice that he wanted.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's where things were just becoming boring for him.
And for those that don't remember, the couriers were the older couple that he killed initially.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, ransom was a part of the plan, but the plan did not involve Samantha Koenig staying alive. So after securing Koenig, Keyes took her to the house he shared with his girlfriend in the Turnagain neighborhood in West Anchorage. Once there, he blindfolded Samantha and led her into the shed right next to his house. Amazingly, Israel risked this while his girlfriend was awake inside and hanging out in the living room.
What are you doing, honey? Just like one of those would work. Good Lord. So this guy, he's really taking some chances here.
Yeah. Now, she could have easily looked out the window and seen what he was doing, but he managed to slip by unnoticed.
Jeez.
Once Samantha was in the shed, he noosed a rope tied to the wall around her neck and tied her hands in front of her so she could smoke if she so chose.
Okay. I guess... polite.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, honestly, I feel like this is an Anchorage thing, because we'll see Israel Keyes is obsessed with smoking in jail too. I just think it's just such a part of, like, if you're 12, you're just given a pack of cigarettes in Anchorage.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not from Anchorage, but I feel like that's like, it's a hobby there.
That's bizarre. Okay.
Then he told her that he had, quote, some errands to do around town to get the ransom thing going, telling her that he was going to be listening to his scanner while he was gone, and if he heard the cops were coming, he'd be sure to get there first, no matter what the consequence. Then, right before leaving, Keyes turned off the lights and flipped on the radio, turning it all the way up so no one would hear her if she decided to scream.
Come, my lady, sugar fly, baby. I can't even leave right now. Fucking love Crazy Town, man.
Yeah, he does sound like someone who would love Crazy Town.
So. No, not at all. He seems like the guy that will talk for 30 minutes as to how much Crazy Town sucks if you even mention that you even kind of like Crazy Town.
Okay,
tell you what, man, I also hate the fact that it should just really be spelled N-E-W metal, because it's such a new take on the whole genre, because I love the flavor of hip-hop. Wicka, 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 wick. There's nothing I love better than a man with a mohawk and a lip ring rapping at me. So dreamy. Just want to have sex with him. Did I say that?
I want to hit your character in the head with a hammer. That's why I want to hit Israel Keyes so bad right now.
Well, the main errand that Israel needed to run was getting a hold of Samantha's debit card. His idea was to eventually use Samantha's phone to get a hold of a friend or family member and direct them to deposit money in her bank account, and then he'd use her debit card to withdraw the money. So, Israel went and fetched Samantha's wallet from her boyfriend's truck across town, came back. By the time he got back, his girlfriend was asleep, so he went inside and poured himself a glass of wine.
Oh, so classy, so classy.
Wine in hand, Keyes put on his headlamp, went outside, and entered the pitch-dark shed where Samantha Koenig was sitting exactly where he'd left her.
Mm.
First, he untied the rope from the wall and laid her down on the tarp. Then, he tied her up further and wrapped a 36-inch cable tie around her neck.
Jeez.
Finally, he cut off her clothes with a knife, stabbed her in the back, and raped her while yanking the table tie as hard as he could until she finally choked to death.
Ugh.
He then used a nylon rope and hung her dead body from a nearby shelf before finishing his glass of wine. After he'd had his fill, he went inside, took a shower, and then just went about his daily chores.
What the
hell?
All of
this is, I mean, it's all gamemanship. Right, you look at this is very similar to BTK, especially also in MO and the way that he did it, the way that he liked playing all these bounces. Also, we got a little bit of Brutus in there because he got his kill shed literally right next to his house, where he likes the idea, the balance of the two.
Mm.
I think that he's not even a wine drinker. That's what I'm going to say. I think that he thought it was a fucking evil villain prop.
Yeah. I'll agree with that.
He's the type of an empty, he's such an empty piece of shit.
Right.
That, like, I don't think he ever enjoyed anything ever.
No.
I think that he was a person, it was all about his appearances. And so when he came in with a glass of wine, because that's what apparently he did, is that he put down a bowl of water for her and he said, "You can have water." And then he sat and drank his glass of wine as she, like, cried in front of him, which was him. Doing a fucking movie version of a shithead and not actually feeling anything on his own.
Yeah, what a piece of shit.
Yeah, he woke up his daughter, fed his dogs, and double-checked that he had everything for the Mexican cruise he was embarking upon later that day.
I got my fucking Slipknot tapes, I got my sombrero, I got my brown face paint, and I'm gonna rock Cozumel, baby.
Oh my God, so this whole time he's planning this cruise, she's still just in his shed, and she's hanging up?
Dead.
She's dead, but she's hanging.
Yeah, she's hanging there. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you didn't want to go into his fucking shed. No one wanted to go into his shed, but mostly you just thought it was going to be a life-size cutout of the guy from Crazy Town with cum all over the torso.
Oh my God.
Live from your grave.
Once everything was set, he went back to the shed, took down Samantha's body, and wrapped her in the tarp. The last thing he did before leaving was to stuff the body in his shed cabinets, knowing that the Alaskan cold would keep the body from decomposing until he got back.
Ugh.
Having done that, he double-locked the doors, called a cab to the airport, and traveled down to New Orleans via Houston and got on a cruise ship touring the Gulf of Mexico for 2 weeks.
Jeez, I mean, this is...
Damn.
What do you do on that cruise ship? Like, I'm serious. Like, you have this woman, she's dead in your frickin', you know, shed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just 2 weeks being like, yeah, these are pretty good marks. Like, what do you, like, how do you decompartmentalize, how do you compartmentalize?
Compartmentalize.
Yes. How the hell do you do that?
I think he did it on purpose. I think he did it from, again... I think he did it as an empty choice because he was such a serial killer fanboy for so long that him doing this, being like, I'm the coldest motherfucker in the world. Like, look how fucking badass I am. I'm going on a fucking cruise. I got my fucking hamburger bar fucking lipped up. I went down to the cruise club. And you know I did the worm because everybody fucking loves the guy who does the fucking worm. Because they're all watching me.
Yeah, of course. Wow. All right.
Yeah, he's just going on the cruise ship. They probably make a stop in Galveston, probably make a stop at San Marcos Island, probably one at Cancun.
Jeez.
You know, just going for 2 weeks, going in off and on this cruise ship and acting like an asshole the whole time.
By himself. He went alone. Okay.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, the search for Samantha Koenig back in Anchorage had begun the moment the kiosk was found empty. The first thing they checked was surveillance footage, but since Keys had made her turn out the lights, all they could make out was a tallish white guy.
Mm. Yeah, if that's the one thing, too, about it, I think we talked about this last episode, covering such a modern serial killer, which we've never really done before, you have all of this footage.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see the footage of her getting kidnapped, which is really harrowing, just on fucking YouTube.
Yeah.
And you can't, it's just a figure walking through, but it happens so fast. Mm-hmm. It's so scary.
Well, the best suspect that they could come up with, and when I say they, I mean the busybodies in the local Anchorage community, was a lanky, aspiring rapper named Christopher Bird, who went by the alias White Tyson.
Hell yeah, dude.
Oh, man, leave White Tyson alone.
Well, apparently he and Samantha had butted heads a few months earlier, and the public had just gone all in on blaming Bird.
Yo, I don't get it, son. You're giving me iced coffee. My thing is, why don't you make the cubes out of fucking coffee? G-Unit? They call me White, and White is tight.
All right, so they got a scapegoat here in White Tyson.
Yeah, they had a scapegoat. And the public outcry was so strong, Bird got kicked out of barber school because the owner couldn't stand the heat, and he lost his $6,000 tuition fee.
What? First of all, that's a hell of a lot of money for barber school.
That's a big bill.
leave him alone. What did White Tyson? He's just trying to rap and cut hair.
But Bird's mother had assured everyone that White Tyson had been grounded at home on the night of the abduction.
Hell yeah, got fucking solid alibi, dude. My mama said I couldn't leave my room. Yeah, I'm 27 years young. I said to my mama, yeah, I respect you, so I'm gonna stay in my room. Play my Switch.
Well, the police easily cleared him as a suspect.
Okay.
But in the public and on the internet, Bird wouldn't have his name cleared for weeks to come.
Okay.
I just want everybody to listen to reason. My real name is Christopher. I have nothing to do with these heinous crimes. And I can't believe that the reputation of Unkrich could possibly be so sullied.
Yeah.
By this, since I just want to say big ups to Lazy J and... G-Unit.
G-Unit.
To everyone who my friends.
Well, Keyes had more to do down south, even before he returned to Anchorage.
Mm.
And we don't know exactly what he did on that cruise, but after returning, Keyes decided to rob a couple of banks before heading back to Alaska.
I mean, to be fair, we know exactly what he did on that cruise. You just lay out, you put a bunch of suntan lotion on your body, a desperately attempt to avoid getting that shit sickness,
uh-huh,
where someone defecates on their hand and then rubs it on your face. I don't know what happens on cruises.
I got really sunburned first day and I had to spend the rest of the time in my room.
In Aledo, Texas, Keyes set fire to a house and a barn just outside the city limits to draw local law enforcement out of town so the bank would be easy pickings for a robbery.
Mm.
But for some reason, Keyes just sat on a hill near the site of the arson and watched emergency vehicles through a pair of binoculars as they struggled with the two blazes.
Mm.
But at his next stop in Azle, Texas, Keyes would go through with his plan. There, he put on a hard hat, glasses, gloves, and a respirator to hide his identity. Then he taped human hair that he got from God knows where to the inside of the hard hat to give him the appearance of long hair.
So, I mean, was he going as like one of the 9/11 heroes? What was this look that he was going for?
If you watch the surveillance video, that's also on YouTube. He does look like one of the disguises from Wayne's World 2 when they dress up as the village people and they end up in the club.
Oh my God.
So with the disguise in place, Keyes robbed the National Bank of Texas. Then, after putting nearly 3,000 miles on the blue Kia Soul he'd rented, Keyes returned his car to the Houston airport and took a red eye back to Anchorage. And upon his return, before he did anything else, Keyes checked to see if Koenig's body was where he left it. After finding that it was, Keyes went inside and played with his daughter because it was his weekend to take care of her.
God, that's so...
I tell you what, there's no days off to being a dad.
Yeah. My God.
But after she went to school on Monday, Keyes returned to the shed and put the next phase of his plan into action. Only thing was, the body had completely frozen in the 20-degree weather in the 2 weeks that Keyes was gone.
Mm.
So in order to get the body out, Keyes had to dismantle the entire cabinet. After getting out the body and cleaning up the blood that had leaked out in the previous 2 weeks, Keyes constructed a table in the shed and placed the body on top. Then, after thawing out the body, Keyes added necrophilia to his long list of crimes.
Ooh, I didn't know we were going to go there here. My God.
Yeah.
Jeez, just when this guy couldn't become more of a douchebag. Wow.
Do you think, this may be an inappropriate question, but do you remember in A Christmas Story when the guy stuck his tongue to the pole?
Yeah.
And it gets stuck? Do you think the same thing happens with a body?
No.
No, I don't think so. But if you want to hear more hard-hitting questions like that, make sure to give $5 to our Patreon. Henry and I do a great interview series. We actually just interviewed John Douglas from Mindhunter, which is
good. I should have asked him.
Yeah, you should have asked him.
If there was anybody to ask,
Yeah. Well, it's always nice when we're just like, oh, this interview ended with another person hanging up. We did a good job. Good job,
guys. We haven't lost anybody yet.
No, not yet.
Well, I did one of the documentaries I watched about Israel Keyes. They said that the thing about him was that almost as a point of showing everybody how hard of a worker he was, again, always going towards my thesis that he has never made a genuine choice in his life, is that he never stopped working. He wouldn't even take lunch breaks. He'd call people who took lunch breaks pussies on his construction site.
Ugh.
Where he'd go and he'd work and he'd work the entire time and work harder than everybody else.
Ugh.
So there's something about him that has this mentality of being like, yeah, I'll take the whole fucking cabinet apart. What do I give a fucking shit? Like, he'll go and he'll make his own custom table just to put it on her. And I think it's all these weird gamemanships within his own mind to show how tough and how crazy he is.
Oh, he's the definition of a tryhard.
Mm.
Which is pretty common in the nu metal community, if I remember correctly.
Right. Okay.
As I was one of them.
You were a tryhard?
Oh, very much a tryhard.
Well, I'm happy you've changed. Get back to work.
Well, after he did necrophilia, I don't know how else to say it. After that,
Jesus,
he went to Target and bought a Polaroid camera. And since they only had the camera, though, Keys went back home, tucked his daughter into bed, and went back out to pick up the film at the Target in Wasilla. Remember Wasilla?
I do remember Wasilla. That's Sarah Palin's land.
Yeah, that's
of course.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go against popular opinion, and I'm going to say, honestly, we can't see Russia from here. I'm honest Israel Keys.
What? I mean, honestly, it is interesting. It's, you know, remember when Sarah Palin made that video of her in front of all of those turkeys that were getting beheaded?
Yeah.
Alaska is more comfortable with bloodshed.
Yeah.
You know, hunting communities are more, I mean, I remember during hunting season in Wisconsin, just the amount of deer guts that would just be in someone's garage.
Yeah.
And you just have to, like, look at it and be like, there that is.
Yeah, then, every time I go back home, there's always a deer hanging from the shed. You know, just kind of bleeding out into a bucket.
Yep.
So. Nah, New York, I was raised with taxes bumping the horns and guys slinging pizzas in the street and stickball and, oh, the Brooklyn Bombers. Me and the Brooklyn Bombers. Zeppelis. That's what I lived in. It's me. Oh, Scorsese, man.
I do love a good Zeppeli.
Well, the next day, Keys continued running errands at Walmart, where he bought makeup similar to what he found in Samantha's purse, along with fishing line and a few sewing needles.
Uh-oh.
Finally, he grabbed a stack of fairly recent newspapers from a recycling dumpster behind a grocery store, and that completed his shopping list for a good old-fashioned ransom note.
Ugh.
See, Keys knew that he wouldn't get any money unless he could quote-unquote prove that Koenig was still alive. But that was what the makeup and fishing line were for.
Oh, my God.
You ever seen Home Alone 2?
Yeah, I saw it.
The only thing you gotta do is get a light set up and get the wires to get her arms moving like she's dancing to a song. And I, you know, nothing better than slapping some crawling in my skin.
Israel, I hate to break it to you. That was Home Alone 1. That was just Home Alone 1.
What?
Yeah, you were actually wrong about that. Yeah, Israel.
I fucking hate being wrong, dude.
This guy, he is probably the whiniest bitch we've ever covered.
Easily.
Yeah.
Now, he first spent 3 hours applying makeup to the face and body, making it appear as if she was alive. Since the face was naturally expressionless, Keys used tape and super glue to give it a little emotion.
Oh.
And the fishing line needles were used to control the expression in her eyes.
It's like fucking Tom Savini in this shit?
Have you seen the photo, Kissel?
I haven't seen it.
Quote-unquote photo, I will say. Because, okay, but first, before we get to that, you know, it took him about like 5 or 6 attempts, and Keys finally got the result he wanted and took a Polaroid picture of the body next to the February 13th edition of the Anchorage Daily News.
Okay.
But there are a couple of different versions out there of what the picture looked like. In one version that I actually saw, Keys had used the fishing line to sew the eyes open, then propped the body fully clothed up against the wall as he somehow held the newspaper next to her and took the photo at the same time.
With a Polaroid, this isn't a smartphone here. It's a tough selfie to take.
Yeah, but the original source of that picture, at least the only original source that I could find, was one of those weird bodybuilding forums that had like a whole bunch of different subjects where you talk about just whatever. And I also don't know how he could have taken the picture and held the newspaper at the angle that he did.
Mm.
I don't know, but what's weird about those bodybuilding forums is that that's where I found the Turner Diary. That's where
really?
I found the Pee Wee Gaskins unreleased book. Like, that's where there's something about bodybuilding forums that has all of this underground PDF shit. in it for some reason.
Interesting.
But in the book Devil in the Darkness, author J.T. Hunter described Keys sewing her eyes to look as if they were shut tightly, and that Keys took the picture of her naked lying on a mattress next to a flattened out edition of the Anchorage Daily News.
Okay.
That's how I had originally read it as well, and I've read other sources. I think that this is a fake picture.
Yes.
I think it might be, because the way I saw it, the way I'd heard was that she was like lying on her side with the newspaper next to her, and that he had painted over the eyelids to make it look like her eyes were open, that he had done it like it was. That's why when they got the picture, they were all like, this does not look right. Like, yeah. This is not a real ransom thing.
Some macabre stuff here.
Yeah, and I couldn't confirm which version of the story is true. But
well, let's go with the bodybuilders.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to argue with them. They're jacked up, they're full of roids, and they'll break us in two.
I love bodybuilders because we have a lot of bodybuilder listeners, but they don't move quick. So you just got to be squirrely or cover yourself in lube, and they can't get you.
Well, considering Keyes' M.O. for wanting to make people feel as horrible as possible, and since Hunter is a published journalist and not an anonymous poster on a bodybuilding forum, the second is probably closer to the truth.
Okay.
But anyway, after taking the photo, Keys typed up a ransom note on a typewriter bought from the Salvation Army. Now, I couldn't find the exact text, but the gist was a pretty standard sneer full of false information and a demand that $30,000 be deposited into Samantha's bank account.
And you know for a fact it was written by Israel Keys because he just got off the cruise and he said, hola, this is Israel Keys. And he learned so much about the culture, the Mexican people.
Uh-huh.
I love it.
He then sealed the note and the photo in two Ziploc bags and drove his girlfriend's car to Connor's Bog Dog Park. Connor's Bog Dog Park, not Connor's Bog Dog Park.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, one sounds like it's hosting a chewing tobacco competition, and the other one sounds like it might take care of dogs.
Also, like, a bog dog just sounds like somebody who lives in Louisiana. That's like a swamp house.
Well, at Connor's Bog Dog Park, Keys tacked the ransom note and the Polaroid under a missing dog flyer near the park's entrance. Mm. With that in place, Keys turned on Samantha's phone and sent this text to her boyfriend.
Connor Park, sign under pick of Albert. Ain't she purdy?
Just the fucking, just feels just rage. So much fucking rage.
I just want to punch this motherfucker so hard in the face.
Listen, I've watched hours of his fucking... I hate this piece of shit.
Yeah, I watched
I hate him so much. You watch him talk. Yeah. It's like, just fucking hit him with the chair.
Honestly, I watched the interrogation video on YouTube, and the cops were very polite.
Yeah.
Like, far too polite.
Well,
like,
they were trying to get information from him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the worst part, though, is that when the boyfriend got the text, he was eating lunch with Samantha's father.
Oh, my God.
So the two of them rushed to the park, found the baggie, and called the police, careful to not touch the package, lest their fingerprints contaminate the scene. But Keys was at the very least careful when it came to not leaving any clues. The cops were given no new leads based on the note, the text, or the picture, and began making preparations to give Keys at least part of the money. Meanwhile, even though it was winter in Alaska, the body had begun to decompose. Keys thought about hiding it in a snowbank in his backyard for a little while, but he decided a permanent solution would be better. So he set about dismembering the body. Using a wire tourniquet on each limb to minimize the bleeding, Keys cut off the limbs one by one with a utility knife and stuffed them into two rolling tote bags. Then he triple bagged the totes and garbage bags and put them in the corner of the shed until he was ready to move them a few days later. And after getting everything he needed for the trip, he took the first package to Matanuska Lake, north of Anchorage.
I love swimming in Matanuska Lake. They got the best leeches. Every time I get out of there, I got 15 to 20 leeches on me, and it's pretty cool.
And I tell my wife, stop being upset with the leeches, because that is lunch. That's a 4-pound leech.
That's
have
a good
idea
leech.
How much primo leech meat that is?
Ooh, that's what you want.
I don't really understand how his girlfriend doesn't notice all this shit.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Like, Natalie knows when I pick up my phone. Like Natalie knows when anything is happening in the house.
Yeah. His girlfriend traveled for work a lot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was what I was thinking that too. I'm like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah. And it seemed as like when she was, he had also made sure to establish a relationship where it was, you do your thing, I do my thing. Sometimes we do things together, but when I'm doing my thing, leave me the fuck alone, no matter what it is.
Again, this is the same thing with Gacy. Just, what are you doing, honey? Just a couple of what are you doing, honeys. That'll solve a lot of stuff here.
Live from your grave. Live from your grave.
Well, Keys knew that transporting the body all in one go would draw too much attention, so he took two different trips to a frozen lake and disposed of the body through a hole in the ice under the guise of going ice fishing.
Mm.
He even went as far as to build a little hut for himself to keep up the ruse. And that was necessary, because on that first day, there was actually another dude out there on the lake with him.
It's just, he's also dumping a body into the lake.
Hey, partner. Hey, partner.
Yeah, what are you doing? You're fishing. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Yeah, fishing. Yeah. Hi, 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 hi.
Yeah, fishing. Hi, 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 hi.
Oh, God.
So the first parts to go were the head, legs, and arms. Each of the three bundles were wrapped in baling wire and attached to heavy fishing weights before being dropped into the ice hole. Then the motherfucker spent about 4 or 5 hours fishing out of the same hole. And even caught a few fish.
How many times did he catch the damn head? Oh, caught the head again. Like, what is this? This man is, he's like next level crazy.
Yeah. And then later that night, he cooked his daughter and girlfriend the fish that he caught while disposing of his murder victim.
Oh my God. Again, where did you get the fish?
And the next day, he disposed of the torso in the same way and caught even more fish.
Oh,
and
God.
And so, following the disposal of the body, Keys felt it was safe enough to finally check Samantha's account to see if the money had been deposited. But he found that only $5,000 had been deposited, not the $30,000 that he demanded.
Also, just the idea to think that this money is not crazy being monitored.
Right,
like,
right.
This is all going swimmingly. This money's just going in there. Like, there's no possible way the police are involved in this. I don't, this is where the wheels are starting to come off for him.
Yeah, it seems like he's sort of in the Ted Bundy phase of just like, I don't know why they're following me to Florida. Like, well, because it's a big deal, buddy.
Well, furthermore, for as much of a quote-unquote criminal genius that Israel Keys was supposed to be, he sure as fuck forgot that you can't withdraw more than $500 a day from most ATMs.
Mm.
So unless he was planning on going to 60 different ATMs over the following 2 months, his plan wasn't going to work out very well. But regardless, the first day, he managed to make it to 2 ATMs while concealing his face and withdrew $1,000. Naturally, the cops staked out every ATM that seemed likely for a withdrawal, but in a city the size of Anchorage, that meant that they could only stake out about 50 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Keys knew that even though the cops couldn't watch all the ATMs in Anchorage, it probably wasn't a good idea to keep withdrawing money up north.
Yeah.
So, Keys traveled back down to the lower 48 for another road trip. In early March, Keys flew down to Las Vegas and rented a white 2012 Ford Focus from Avis and drove to Dallas, probably to retrieve a gun from a kill kit left after the Azel bank robbery.
I actually read a thing that I didn't know, that he had to extra cover these guns with grease so that they wouldn't jam after they sit in there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be really fucking scary to have a super slippery gun.
Yeah, it sounds like it could really lead to a lot of accidents.
It's not axle grease.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Is it pomade? What the hell is he putting on the damn thing? I don't know. When does he work? Does he work this whole time?
He owns his own business.
He's a contractor. He's an independent contractor. He doesn't have, it doesn't seem, it's not just, it might not be his own business.
It is his own business.
Does he do that?
He did, yes. He started it, owned it, operated it, the whole shebang.
So he's just on vacation?
They work for months at a time. Well, he could take time off whenever the fuck he wants.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, after getting his kill kit, he doubled back to Arizona and withdrew $400 from an ATM in the small town of Wilcox. An hour and a half later, yes, Wilcox.
It's not even that funny of a name. It's a very common name.
I had a teacher named Mrs. Wilcox. It's fine.
You have to save this for when it's a truly funny name.
So an hour and a half later, he was in Lordsburg, New Mexico, but again hit the daily limit and only managed to get out another $80. But here, he fucked up for the first time. Although the camera at the ATM wasn't great, the FBI, using enhancement, were able to see that the car belonging to the man using Samantha's debit card was a 2012 Ford Focus.
Okay.
Whoa.
But Keys had a feeling that this car might have been spotted by now. So after his New Mexico withdrawal, he drove 13 hours across New Mexico and Texas to Humble, where he ducked into an Avis to trade his rental car.
Okay.
Like, all of these hours of work to do this. This is like hours and hours of work. It has to eventually wear on your brain.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Well, he figured that if he kept switching cars while withdrawing money, the cops would never catch up to him. But when he went to trade in his white 2012 Ford Focus, he was annoyed to receive a white 2012 Ford Focus.
No, sir. This is all we have for you is a 2012 Ford Focus.
I don't think you understand. I showed up with one of these, and I don't want another one. Is it working?
Here's a red Sharpie if you want to go color it in yourself, bud.
I love hard work, and I'll work harder than you, you juke. I'll work harder than anybody who's ever lived.
Did you just call me a juke, sir? I don't even know if that's an offensive term
you
or not.
Shut up and don't tell me what curse words are, because I'm always right, and I'm never wrong. That's my crying noise.
Well, he couldn't very well tell the rental car company that he was on the run from the law and needed to hide his identity, so he needed a different kind of car. Like, I think he'd gone in and told him, like, hey, this car's making weird noise. I need a new one. So when they gave him the 2012, he just had to go, fuck it, all right. He just had to take it.
That is hilarious.
You switch with it. You always got to flip it to be like, my mom was raped by a Ford Focus.
That's horrible. That is quite humorous with the Ford Focus thing.
Yeah, it is, man.
Yeah.
And furthermore, just before he traded in the car, he'd withdrawn another $480 from an ATM, which put Texas cops on high alert. And that is the last fucking thing you want in this world.
Yeah, they're never really on low alert. So as soon as a Texas cop is like, and now we're going more extreme, it's like your days are numbered.
Texas cops are terrifying.
Yeah.
I was driving in the middle of an abandoned country highway in Texas. Nobody there. Nobody on the road. I was driving. Yes. Was I doing 90 and a 65? Yes.
Yeah.
Right? No one's on there, right? Trying to make good time. Going. One bush. Straight up. One bush in the middle of this whole highway. Cop was fucking inside of it.
Yeah.
Drove out of the bush. I didn't see him. Came out thinking, and then pulled me over and he's like, y'all ready to go to jail?
Yeah.
And I was just like, why?
Yeah, that's one of their favorites. Yeah. One of their y'all ready to go to jail is a big thing. Yeah.
Well, I would be like, wouldn't you believe it? I am. Yes.
Showing my gaping asshole.
Yeah, ready.
Tits on my back.
Ready
you better
to
got
roll.
Nipples on my back fat, and I'll be ready to be butt fucked at any time, officer.
Here my we only. Go. No, you don't want to mess with the Texas cops.
No. Terrifying. But Keys had another reason for being down in Texas besides just withdrawing money. It also happened to be the weekend of his sister's wedding.
Oh, my God. So he's doing all this normal people stuff.
Always, yeah.
Going on cruises, going to weddings, taking care of his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Life is what happens when you're busy making other plans.
I guess.
So after getting the car, Keys drove to Nacogdoches, just northeast of the town of Wells, where his extended family had fallen into another cult.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
They were now followers of the Church of Wells, formerly You Must Be Born Again Ministries, or the YBBAM.
And, of course, that's the Church of David Wells, the former Yankees pitcher. A little overweight, but, you know, good leader.
Is this a Yankees sports joke?
Yeah, you fucking nerd. It is a baseball. David Wells, he's a pitcher. They throw the ball.
He's fat. He's fat?
He's fat.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, he's
fat. Why is he a baseball player? I thought baseball players couldn't be fat.
Is he like Roger Clemens fat?
No, Roger Clemens was strong. No, no, David Wells is pitcher fat. Pitchers are just lumps. They're big old
Explain
lumps.
Explain the joke again.
David Wells was a pitcher for the Yankees.
Compare him to Kirby Puckett.
He's like Kirby Puckett, but he can see. Kirby Puckett can't see anything.
Kirby Puckett was blind?
He got hit by a baseball.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's... And that's this week in baseball from the 90s.
Well, the Church of Wells is still run by three former street preachers around our age, and they use Bible verse to justify cutting off family members, although not all members practice that particular command, just most of them. Mm. And the controversy section on the Church of Wells' Wikipedia page is actually quite long. In 2012,
what?
They carried the dead body of an infant from house to house in Wells, praying for resurrection before they finally called 911. Then, in 2014, one of the head pastors and another member ruined the Wells homecoming parade by walking along the route while telling children that they were going to go to hell. And they were soundly beaten as a result.
Oh, okay. Mm, yeah. All right. I like that little justice there.
Yeah. Their only slightly redeeming act was when six members were arrested in 2015 for bursting in the Lakewood Church in Houston to heckle Joel Osteen. But even then, it's still just six assholes yelling at a slightly different kind of asshole.
Yeah, I mean... Oh, my God. And that also, I'm sure, led to them getting their asses kicked because Joel Osteen's security, very well paid and very jacked up.
Yeah. And it was the leader of this group that was presiding over Israel's sister's wedding. Naturally, this guy was one of those preachers who took a wedding as an opportunity for a sermon.
Thank you. The last time I was at a wedding, the pastor decided to really let us know about what he thinks about transgender individuals.
Cool.
I said, thank you for bringing this. Thank you for bringing this to this wonderful ceremony to celebrate love.
Cool.
I hate when pastors... That's why... Yes. Anyway, it
fucking
doesn't
worse.
Matter.
Yeah.
This is not about you, pastor.
Yeah. And so the pastor started talking about the evils of atheism.
Oh, great.
Now, Israel took this as a personal attack. And honestly, he might have actually been right to think that in this case.
Yep. Because he was the black sheep of the family.
Yes. Mm.
At this point. Because he had left the church. He had, like, he went to go live his own atheist style, and he was super new metal about being atheist. So he was, like, all about, like, he wore a shirt that said God with the Ghostbusters, like, cross out on top of it. Like, he's that type of guy.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
But regardless, even if it is directed at you, it's your sister's wedding.
Yeah.
You'd stay fucking quiet.
Right. You just got to eat it. Yeah.
But what Israel did instead was stand up and yell this.
Your gospel has no grounding in truth.
Then he walked up to the altar, smugly smiled, and said, quote,
not everyone shares your beliefs.
All right. Well, you know, sometimes you got to stand up for yourself. He's just such a piece of shit.
He's just so fucking awful. Then he just left. And that was his last weekend as a free man. As a few days later, the Texas Highway Patrol caught up to Israel Keyes.
All right.
A full bolo had been put out on the Ford Focus.
What's a bolo?
All points bulletin.
Oh.
I can't remember. Full bolo. I can't remember what the bolo stands for.
Sounds like something I'd get at Kentucky Fried Chicken there. Just get full bolo.
Honestly, it sounds like a thing of cheats.
Bolo. Be on the lookout.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Bolo.
Full bolo. We're in full bolo mode, boys.
I feel like when I'm on full bolo mode, I'm taking a massive shit.
Well, Keyes had parked his Ford Focus in full view outside the Quality Inn of Lufkin. Now, Hypo caught sight of it, ran the plates, and found it was being rented to a one Israel Keyes of Anchorage. Now, they wanted to do this one by the book, so they sat and waited until Keyes fucked up. Luckily, he did so almost immediately.
Great.
He left his room and started driving down the road, and the second he went 1 mile over the fucking speed limit, they pulled him over. When they searched the car, they found a gun, money from a bank robbery, the mask that Keyes had worn when withdrawing money from the ATMs, and most damningly, the debit card and cell phone of Samantha Koenig.
Why do serial killers always drive around with everything that would make them look like a serial killer? Why not just leave that in your hotel room?
I actually, it's a hard decision to make, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, is it better to keep all my shit on me where I know it is at all times, where I can see it and I have it, or do I leave it someplace and it just so happens? What if it gets discovered by somebody?
Yeah.
What if you have to deal with this kind of shit? So you believe you're holding it, but then if you do get caught, you're right on it. But Israel Keyes technically had a backup plan. He knew that he was going to pull a gun if he got pulled over. His goal was to immediately kill the cop, but he couldn't get to the gun in time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what, like, the way he kind of said it. He had put it in the wrong bag, but he was ready to, like, shoot somebody in the head if they got anywhere close to him.
Jeez. I mean, you know, if you are going to leave that a bag with a gun and a mask and a Quality Inn, they would be like, oh, yeah, that's another bag here in a Quality Inn. Like, you know.
You've never thought about what you do if you accidentally murdered somebody, how you'd cover it up?
I haven't thought about that in depth. I don't think that I could cover it. I'm 6'7". I think I would be found pretty quickly.
But you've never thought of it? Like, how you'd get rid of the weapon? What'd you do with it?
I think I would do something.
Well, I know that you have.
I think you would just put it in the sewage drain, you know, on the street, because that flushes through every 10 hours or so.
Yeah.
And then once you get it in that, so probably just something like that.
Yeah. Thought exercise is definitely, that's happened before.
Yeah, I mean,
we're allowed to still think in this country.
Of course.
We still think.
I have a full, brain spider web on the walls that I've been painting. I'm thinking about it, sure.
Well, Keys was royally fucked and was quickly shipped back to Alaska to face punishment. Now, even though Keys knew they had him dead to rights, it didn't take much pushing to get him to confess everything.
Mm.
Now, Keys liked to say over and over and over again that he wasn't in this for the publicity and that he didn't want people to know who he was, but that's exactly what he fucking wanted.
Of course
he fucking wanted it, because no one's going to know you're a serial killer unless you tell people you're a fucking serial killer.
Right.
Yeah, if he didn't want that, then he would have shut his goddamn mouth and not said a word.
Right.
He never would have sent ransom demands. He never would have killed in Anchorage. But as it was, he talked, giving the excuse that talking would get him into the execution chamber that much sooner, because he said the death penalty was all he was interested in. He's like, I'll tell you everything, just make sure I get killed as quickly as possible.
Mm.
And he said he wanted no publicity, and he didn't want the details to reach the public, because he said he didn't want his daughter to live with the shame of her father being a serial killer. But maybe he should have thought of that before becoming a fucking serial killer.
Absolutely, and I do feel horrible for his daughter. That's just gotta be so freaking weird.
Yeah.
How do you trust anyone when your father is Israel Keys?
Yeah, this is what he said. He said, quote,
"My concern, the problem is, nowadays, the more stuff my name is attached to, the more likely it is that somebody's going to try to do some kind of stupid freaking TV special or, you know how it is. Nowadays, like with all this true crime bullshit that people are obsessed with, like some fat idiot with a beard is going to make fun of my laugh. And there's nothing wrong with my laugh."
I do love that Israel Keys is slowly becoming a version of Casey Anthony from Hell.
Yes.
They are very similar in temperament.
I think this is the ultimate justice for serial killers, since you get to be made fun of by three fucking idiots who get to sell ads on it.
Yep.
Like, we get to do all of this shit. Fuck you. Fuck you.
Fuck you.
David Berkowitz. Fuck you.
Yep.
Still, though, Israel Keys talked for hours on end, laughing at his own terrible jokes while demanding Americanos, peanut butter Snickers bars, and cigars in exchange for information.
Oh, that is actually disgusting.
Yeah, it is.
Snickers and cigars and Americanos.
But it's weird. Like, it's liquid shit. It's an actual dookie and another harder dookie that you just suck on.
Yeah.
It's all shit-colored things.
Yeah. As soon as he got down to the holding cell, he must have had a real explosion in there. He sent a message. Yeah.
The problem was, Alaska doesn't have the death penalty.
What? He didn't even know that?
No.
If Keys wanted that, he'd have to make the case federal. So he began admitting to murder after murder, specifically the murders of Bill and Lorraine Currier. Mm. Sadly, though, by the time Keys told investigators where he'd killed them and hid their bodies, the abandoned farmhouse where he'd done it had been torn down, and nobody had noticed the two bodies in the rubble.
Jeez.
I mean, sure, the crew had noticed a powerful stench coming from the basement right before they tore it down, but they ultimately decided it was probably just a dead cat or something. So they tore the whole place down and sent the rubble to a landfill without checking.
Oh, my. Well, that is a hell of a way not to find a body.
Yeah.
Just be like, well, that's a cat.
Yeah.
For sure, that's a cat. Yeah.
That's a cat.
And even after an extensive search, the bodies were too far gone to ever be found.
Wow.
The only reason why they can definitively attach the murders to Keys is because information was found on his home computer linking him to the area.
Mm.
But still, as we all know, the wheels of justice work slow, and Keys would have had a better chance of being found innocent than to go from arrest to execution in a year like he wanted.
Well, he had a total, he had a totally childish view of the way the criminal justice system works.
Right.
He thought that he could just show up and demand all this shit and they would immediately give it to him. They unfortunately had to play nice with him for as long as possible because he threw out immediately tidbits that he was trying to connect himself to about 8 murders.
Mm-hmm.
And so their jobs here are trying to get as many cold cases shut as quickly as possible.
Right.
So they're trying to work with him and talk about all this shit, but at the same time, keep telling him, being like, dude, this is going to take a long time. This is
right.
This is it. Like, we're in the process of this. The way we can maybe hurry this is if you do, if you give us all this information now, and we can then work out how we can kill you as soon as possible. But Israel Keys, he started catching on at some point. If you watch the hours of interrogation where he just straight up said, being like, I don't really need to sit and wait for you guys to do it when I can handle myself. Like, he says that.
Well,
that he knows that he can get himself away.
Isn't he also making the process longer?
Yes.
With each new person that he claims to have murdered, isn't that another trial?
Yeah.
So isn't that just elongating the entire process?
Because he was a weak piece of shit that couldn't handle jail. Because he couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle the noise. He hated being jeered at. He hated being on the low rung of a totem pole. He hated you going there and he was immediately getting physically checked. He couldn't handle it.
Right.
So that's a part of it. And this is where I view him as such a, he's so weak even compared to BTK, because I am going to put out there, to be a serial killer, a part of it is the third wave of being the incarcerated monster. That's
right.
The role you're supposed to play. If you're going to be a notorious serial killer, you're supposed to be a boogeyman kept
right.
in a cage that people can go visit. Like, you can go be BTK, who sits and he's got his little color television and he has his, like, the forms you have to fill out in order to
speak. Oh my god,
to him.
Yeah.
You have to, like, do all, you have to find, that's where you're supposed to reside. That's serial
right.
killer retirement.
Absolutely. Michael Myers in Rob Zombie's Halloween, mm-hmm. that was a great incarceration scene, and Carl Panzeram.
Yeah.
That's what you're supposed to be.
Well, of course, the story got out because Israel Keys was a goddamn serial killer, and the Samantha Koenig story had been national news. I mean, you guys remember when
that
was, I mean, even before Israel Keys was caught, I remember the Samantha mm-hmm. Koenig story. And after that, Keys stopped talking for a while, saying he'd felt betrayed.
Oh.
And that he was, quote,
honestly, kind of ticked off.
Yeah.
Oh, you're kind of ticked off, are you?
Yeah.
Live from your grave. Live from your grave.
So after it became apparent that Keys wasn't going to get what he wanted from the state immediately, he decided to take matters into his own hands rather than face the punishment for his crimes. On December 2nd, 2012, Israel Keys noosed a bedsheet around his neck, tied the other end to his left ankle, and cut his own wrists with a contraband razor, ensuring that if the blood loss didn't get him, the strangulation caused by loss of consciousness would. He even thought to use empty milk containers and cups to capture as much blood as he could while he was still conscious to make sure nobody would be alerted by a growing pool of blood coming from under his cell door.
Mm.
And Israel Keys fucking died.
All
well,
right.
He had had a couple, there was a couple of things about him that did happen. He did try to escape from court.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Very pathetically.
Yeah. Very pathetically, he tried to escape from court.
I'm just going to go to the bathroom.
he managed to work his way out of his ankle chains. He ran out in the middle of a court hearing, and they fucking tackled his ass.
Of course.
Right? But ever since then, he became a high-risk prisoner. that at some point they had put him, he was on total suicide watch, mm-hmm. where he was fully chained every single day while they were interrogating him. And then eventually they had moved him to the lower security part of the jail, which they believe happened because he said, I'm willing to talk. He finally said, all right, I'm going to go and we're going to do this shit. I'm going to go and tell people the whole story. Because
right.
They brought him to, which is the Bravo module, which was the long-term prisoner section for people once he got outside of the suicide threat cell, which
right,
was like
right.
basically strip the bed sheets and all yeah. this kind of shit. And then the poor dude that was supposed to be watching him, Lauren Jacobson, who was immediately fired.
Yeah.
He was fired because essentially he was on his union break. He was about,
right.
and he was reading a book as like, it's like a movie shot. You could just see him being like, I wonder if Harry Potter will ever defeat Voldemort. And as the camera, as he's saying it over his shoulder, you just saw his legs just fucking
right,
jerking.
Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
And of course, Israel Keyes couldn't leave without telling the world what he thought of him one last time.
Uh-oh.
And did so in a long-winded, nu metal-influenced slam poetry suicide note.
Oh, God. Now, that's the worst kind of suicide note, a slam poetry one.
Everyone, please enjoy the worst piece of poetry ever written.
Really?
Let's get this started with a little bit of a beat, Marcus. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, bro. All right. Where will you go, you clever little worm, if you bleed your host dry? Back in your eye, the night is still young. Streetlights push back. The black and neat rows. Off to the right, a graveyard appears. Limes of stone, bodies molder below. Turn away quick, bob your head to the seat as straight through that stop sign you roll. Loaded truck with lights off slams into your broadside, your flesh smash as metal explodes. You may have been free, you loved living your lie. Fate had its own scheme, crushed like a bug, you still die. Soon now, you'll join those ranks of dead or your ashes the wind will soon blow. Family and friends will shed a few tears, pretend it's off to heaven you go. But the reality is, you were just bones and meat. And with your brain also died your soul. Send the dying to wait for their death in the comfort of retirement homes. Kick it. Justify. Say it's for the best. It's best for you so the fate you'll not know. Turn a blind eye to the screen, soak in your reality shows. Stand in front of your mirror and you preen in a plastic castle you call home. Land of the freak, land of the lie, land of scheme, American eyes. Consume what you don't need, stars you idolize. Pursue what you admit is a dream, then it's American die. Get in your big car so you can get to work fast on roads made out of dinosaur bones.
There's so much more left.
There's a lot more of this left.
Punch in on the clock and sit on your ass playing stupid-ass games on your phone. Paper on your wall says you got smarts. That test that you took told you so, but you would still crawl like the vermin you are once your precious power grid's blown.
Can I
land of the free, land of the lie, land of the scheme, American eyes. Now that I have you held tight, I will tell you a story. Speak soft in your ear so you know that it's true. You are my love at first sight. And though you're scared to be near me, my words penetrate your thoughts now in an intimate prelude. I looked into your eyes. They were so dark, warm and trusting, as though you had not a worry nor care. The more guileless the gaze, the better potential to fill up those pools with your fear. Your face framed in dark curls like a portrait. The sun shone through highlights of red. What color, I wonder? And how straight will it turn plastered back with the sweat of your dread? Your wet lips were a promise of a secret unspoken. Nervous laugh as it bursts like a pulse of blood from your throat. There will be no more laughter here. I feel your body tense up. My hand now on your shoulder. Your eyes looking for a way out of this small, dark room. Forget the lady called Luck. She does not abide near me, for her powers don't extend to those who are deceased. Precious pet, would that I could keep you, let you be the master of your own fate. Violent metamorphosis.
Oh my God. Can you just kill yourself, Israel, already? Kill yourself, Israel.
I'm not done with my song, dude. And can you see my fucking head? You see my head tilts?
I know your head tilts are very good. You're like West Borland.
I would come often and worship on the altar of your flesh. You shudder with revulsion and try to shrink far from me. I'll have you tied down and begging to become my Stockholm sweetie. Okay, talk is over. Words are placid and weak. Back it with action, or it all comes off as cheap. Watch close while I work now. Feel the electric shock of my touch. Open your trembling flower, or your petals I'll crush.
Oh my God. This man. Wow. That was the worst. Man, I feel like it's what is that movie when I think it's Adam Sandler where the guy's like, "Thank you, we are all dumber for hearing what you had to say."
And I feel like I'm back at the fucking open mic at Frankenstein's in Lubbock, and it's fucking it's 1999.
Yeah, interesting.
And Used Oil just played a set
because you could see him like writing it out, just going like, "Yeah."
Yeah, this is it.
Yeah, this is fucking killer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I got to send this to Chester.
Yeah, you better send it to Chester. That's going to be a huge hit for Limp Bizkit.
Well, the only satisfying part about the death of Israel Keyes is knowing that his funeral service was overseen by the pastor that Keyes had heckled at his sister's wedding.
That is funny.
And the pastor spent the whole time talking about what an awful person Keyes was and how he was currently burning in hell.
Okay.
But regardless, just know that a big part of the reason why Keyes talked was so people would know what he did and would think that he was a big, scary criminal mastermind. And for the most part, the media took the fucking bait.
Always do.
But while Keyes did indeed cause a lot of suffering and a lot of pain, we're not minimizing that, he was not Professor fucking Moriarty, nor was he even among the scariest serial killers to ever exist. He was nothing more than a smug, whiny, immature little dickhead who couldn't figure out anything better to do with his time on this earth than kill people.
All right. Wow. That's Israel Keyes. That was a really interesting story. I don't think we've ever covered any story quite like Israel Keyes. What a man.
He attempted to be a unique monster, but in the end, all these guys boiled down to the same loser.
Yeah. Right,
it's all
right.
Just
always,
the same loser that couldn't get his shit together enough to just love his life. I mean, like, you had everything. You had love.
Right.
You
had
family. You had a good job. You had all the things that a normal person, it would be enough for.
Right.
And you felt that it wasn't, but it's just because the thing that you were lacking, nobody could ever fill, and you probably just should have been aborted.
I mean, it does seem like the only thing that was mildly strange about his childhood was growing up in a cult, but a lot of people have that kind of childhood and grow up just fine.
It wasn't even really that much of a cult.
Yeah.
Like, it was just a weird small town, you know, and it
strange.
Was, you know, with some white supremacists living down the block. Plenty of people come out just fine of that situation.
Well, and some stay and make the country worse, but, you know, very rare does it lead to making someone a serial killer. All right, well, that was Israel Keyes. That was great. Let's see here. What do we have to do? We have to say
we're doing good with Salt Lake. We need people. You got to come as Vancouver show.
Got to come.
We're
as
so
Vancouver
excited
show.
For this show. We're so excited for this fucking show. You got to come out. We're having a good time. We're gonna have a good tour. Come on out Vancouver.
Absolutely. And of course, I know because we are. I don't want to use the G word, but I think it applies to us genius. We scheduled our Salt Lake City show on the same night of the Game of Thrones finale.
I just don't
which
know.
Which is just brilliant.
I didn't know.
We didn't. No one thought to look.
No, I know.
It's everything's on streaming now. God
I know.
Damn it.
So just
I'm going to watch it in the hotel room after
gonna,
the show. It's going
to
be fine.
Yes. Come to the show. Watch it afterwards. I promise no spoilers.
None.
Because I never watched the show, so I can't even spoil it.
I'm not going to spoil the show.
So, right.
It's fine. And also, don't forget, everyone, that we are we added a second Portland show to that tour. The first night in Portland on June 1st, that sold out. But we have tickets left for the June 2nd show in Portland. And Portland was fantastic last time we were there. Can't wait to come back to Portland. So definitely come out to that. And then after Portland, we got a big, long stretch of hanging out here in America. And then we're going to Australia.
Yeah,
we're going to be on the 23rd, we're in Perth. On the 24th, we're in Adelaide. On June 27th, we're in Sydney. Come on out to Sydney. June 28th, we're in Melbourne, and June 29th, we're in Brisbane.
And June 30th, I'm going to be on a sidewalk hammered in Brisbane, so make sure come out and hang out. It'll be a lot of fun.
I believe it's Brisbane.
Brisbane.
Is
Brisbane.
It Melbourne?
Brisbane.
Melbourne?
Brisbane. Brisbane.
I will cannot say, wait. I want to put this notice out here now. I want to put this out in the universe. If you're an Australian occult or true crime expert and want to possibly be interviewed, you want to talk about stuff, send us some emails. Send us stuff that you want to talk about, Australian paranormal topics or Australian true crime, because we're going to be recording side stories on the road while we're out there, and we're really, really excited to meet some people that are local to Australia that can explain some shit to us.
Absolutely. Cannot wait to get over to Australia. And thanks to everyone who gives to our Patreon. You seriously are the only reason we exist. We're still DIY over here at LPN, and for $5 you can listen to the Henry and my interview series. It's a lot of fun, and it's just great little bonus content, so thank you so much for giving to that.
And also, Henry, I have to say, I did not realize on the stream available over on adultswim.com/streams, I didn't realize that when we did the Hee Haw episode, your backdrop was a cornfield.
I noticed
we don't see what's going on the green screen behind you while we're recording, but that's a very nice touch.
We worked on that for an entire week in secret, and I didn't tell you guys.
And also,
it was really fun.
And also, Adult Swim now has a 24-hour channel for the stream, so you can go watch us do the stream whenever you want. I just gotta find the address for that. I will find it soon.
You can watch us get thinner and fatter, fatter and thinner.
Yep, if you go to adultswim.com/stream/last-stream-on-the-left-channel.
Is this Mavis Beacon teaches typing? What the hell is happening?
You can go watch a 24-hour stream of Last Stream on the Left.
Yes, and if you want that link a little bit easier, we'll tweet it out on the Last Podcast, Last Podcast on the Left Twitter, and we'll tweet that out so you can get that.
Also, we are submitting our book this week. It is happening.
Oh,
it's coming. It is flopping out of our fucking uterus.
I don't want to hear the four-letter word.
Our vaginas are just so fucking floppy right now. It's all out. Ready to go. But this next month of topics, I'm really fucking excited because we're getting weird.
Yes.
I'm really excited to get. We're getting back to some weird. We're getting back to some my favorites. Ooh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
To really, really get into some stuff.
After 10 years of doing the show, now we're going to start getting weird?
It's a little weird.
We're going to start getting weird, huh?
Yeah, man. Yeah. I've been deep into serial killers for about 3 to 4 weeks straight now without a day off. I'm looking forward to, let's see what's going on in the sky.
What's happening in the skies.
Henry and I solicited responses from people who are in the Navy. Obviously, there's a lot of disclosure going on with UFOs. We had a lot of great responses in our emails.
We did.
And I got some great DMs on Instagram as well at BenKissel1. The Navy is on the front line, so thanks for sending those messages out to us, and we'll read a couple on this week's side stories, or next week's side stories, I suppose. All right, everyone, thank you so much for listening, and do not forget, hail yourselves!
Hail Satan!
Hail Gene!
Magustalations!
Hail me, give it to the boys' knees, tiny little feet, hail me.
You could really be a successful new metal singer, man.
American Lies! American Lies!
It does sound like a horrible Rage Against the Machine lyrics.
He was a big Rage Against the Machine fan.
I love that band, but my God, they attracted some douchebags.
Well, now he's worm food.
Yes, he is, indeed. Best thing he ever did, probably.
Yep. This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.